to the fourth case, Ortega versus Holder. Mr. Morsch.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jim Morsch. I represent the appellant, Ms. Ortega. The question presented by this case is, in a situation where a person has been adjudicated to be a U.S. citizen in removal proceedings, but denied the issuance of a certificate of citizenship, whether that person is entitled to any judicial review at all. Our position is there has to be a judicial outlet, an Article III opportunity for such persons. The government's position is that Congress, in enacting 1503 of INA in 1952, intended to deny such persons ever having the right to go into a court of law, and we think that's erroneous. To review the facts of this case, Ms. Ortega was placed in removal proceedings. The immigration judge found, based on the preponderance of the evidence, that she is a U.S. citizen because of her birth. Namely, she was born of a U.S. father and a Mexican mother who at the time were living together as a common law husband and wife in Texas. The problem, though, for any alien who is found to be a citizen in removal proceedings is that immigration judges cannot issue such certificates. Therefore, she needed to, and she did file an application with USCIS. That application was denied. It was denied in what I believe to be an unprecedented bureaucratic speed of 12 days. She moved to reopen that proceeding, and that request was denied. She moved for the Administrative Appeals Unit to reconsider the denial of that, and that, too, was denied, leaving her only one forum.
If the certificate of citizenship had been granted prior to the ruling of the IJ, would the IJ have been bound by the granting of the certificate?
No, he would not have.
Suppose it had been the other way. Suppose the certificate had been denied prior to the ruling of the IJ, would the IJ have been bound?
No, he would not.
Is there any statute or regulation that prevents parallel proceedings before an IJ and in an application for a certificate at the parallel proceedings at the administrative level?
Absolutely not. There is no regulation. In fact, the statute we have, 1503, only bars a concurrent simultaneous action in district court. And that's not what happened here. We filed this action in district court well after termination of the removal proceedings. And so that's exactly what Congress was concerned about.
Congress has not spoken about the race at the administrative level at all.
I think that's a fair characterization. And, in fact, there are cases where there is an ongoing removal proceeding, an action concurrently pending in district court, like the Rios-Valenzuela case that we believe was wrongly decided by the Fifth Circuit. What we think should have happened in that case was the district court, after being advised that there was a removal proceeding existing at the time where the issue of citizenship was at issue, district court should have stayed its decision, shouldn't have done anything with the case until the immigration judge decided the issue of citizenship. That was Congress's intent. Congress's intent was not to close the doors permanently to courts.
So your view is Congress's intent was to keep avoid parallel proceedings in the Article III courts.
That's right. It also had a second intent. It also wanted to prevent second bites of the apple. So in the situation where the immigration judge actually adjudicates and denies, and denial is important here in the context of 1503. When an immigration judge denies the status of citizenship, there is an avenue of pursuing an appeal of that decision, and that's 1252.
That's right.
And you get to the circuit courts of appeals directly after your administrative appeals are exhausted. But that's not what happened here. There was no ruling from the IJ denying.
Here, the government did get a second bite at the apple.
That's right. In fact, rather than appealing the IJ's decision, which they decided not to do, they used their own administrative, unreviewable decision from their point of view to basically contradict the IJ's decision. And our position is maybe that was right, maybe that was wrong, but at a minimum, citizens like Ms. Ortega should be able to get into a court to fight about that and argue that point.
What are the consequences of this situation as it now stands for your client?
She cannot be issued a passport because she doesn't have any official proof that she's a U.S. citizen. If she leaves the country, she can be detained because aliens can be detained. And she would have to then prove in that detention proceeding that she, in fact, is a U.S. citizen.
In other words, if she were to leave and attempt to return.
That's right.
So the possibility of another removal proceeding based on some other ground than the one in the first is, in your view, still a possibility?
It is, but there is case law that says an immigration judge's prior decision does bar the relitigation of the issue in a removal proceeding, in which case the Immigration Service could put her in removal proceedings. She and her lawyers would immediately call the attention of the immigration judge to a prior immigration judge's decision saying dismiss this removal proceeding.
Right. She can't be removed. She's just in this limbo.
That's right. She's in limbo. She cannot be removed from this country.
She can be placed in detention
until it gets sorted out, and that's a problem for her.
But she can be excluded if she leaves the country and attempts to return. Is that right?
No, she cannot be excluded because an immigration judge has already found her to be a U.S. citizen. My only point, Your Honor, is to say she could still be put in proceedings. U.S. citizens are put in proceedings all the time.
She has an absolute defense.
That's right. She has an absolute defense. What she doesn't have is the certificate of citizenship that would allow her to vote, travel freely without these incidents, and the like, and work freely in the country.
All of what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense, except that's not what the statute says, and that's what bothers me here. The statute is worded very broadly that, you know, it establishes this procedure for judicial determinations of citizenship upon the denial of that right by an agency, except that, and I'm quoting now, no such action may be instituted in any case if the issue of such person's status as a national arose by reason of or in connection with any removal proceeding, or subsection 2, is in issue in any such removal proceeding. We're really dealing with the first part here.
We are dealing with the first part. And there's two ways to answer Your Honor's conundrum, because I agree, it's not the clearest statute. But we know how to put it in context, which is when this was passed in 1952, this was not part of the recent efforts of Congress to either channel or limit judicial review. They were providing judicial review. Second of all, when we look at the arose by reason of or connection with, her claim that she's pursuing in district court did not arise by reason of or in connection with the removal proceeding, because that removal proceeding resulted in adjudication in her favor on the issue.
Well, but it did. It arose in, I mean, she filed her application, her whatever it is, N-600, is that the name of the form?
Yes.
She filed her application after she had been placed in removal and asserted this defense.
Understood, but
so
by no means...
So it arose, I mean, it technically meets the literal language of the statute.
I don't believe that's accurate for two reasons. First of all, her claim to citizenship either arose in one of two contexts, either by her birth, and that's what the law provides. When someone's born to persons situated like her parents were situated, she's a citizen automatically. Or, Your Honor, it is triggered by a denial. There was no denial in the removal proceeding. So our position is the arose by reason of or in connection with language is a cause and effect. The cause and effect has to be related to the removal proceeding, the denial, that is. There was no denial by the immigration judge in that circumstance.
So the first clause of the statute isn't met until there is a denial by the agency of the certificate. That's the first time the statute's even triggered.
That's right.
But it says the issue. It doesn't say the denial.
But the denial in grammatical lingo, you have to take into consideration that language. The except is modifying the denial language forward in the statute. In fact, there isn't a single case that the government has cited where an immigration judge found in favor of a U.S. citizen and the court held, any court held, that that citizen was denied the right to pursue a claim through 1503.
Can she file a new N-600?
The government is speaking both sides of its mouth on this issue. Our unfortunate position is no, because of the this Court's interpretation of the 5-year statute of limitation under Venske, which is because there was a final adjudication in February of 2003, she is time-barred from refiling an N-600. Now, their position is they read the statute as saying, well, if she filed a new one, a new application, that is, that wouldn't have its genesis in a removal proceeding. And our question is, well, why not? As far as I'm concerned, there's only one book of genesis. There's only one time something has its genesis. Either it was in those removal proceedings or it wasn't. If it was, she's forever barred from under the statute of limitations for bringing this claim. I see my time is close to being up. I'd like to reserve some for rebuttal, unless Your Honor has another question before I sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Thank you.
Mr. Dempsey.
Good morning, Your Honor. Christopher Dempsey for Appalese. The district court in this case properly held that Section 1503A1 precluded jurisdiction because Ortega's citizenship application did arise by reason of or in connection with the removal proceedings. She didn't apply for a certificate of citizenship until removal proceedings were pending against her. She resided in the United States for at least 10 years prior to the initiation of removal proceedings, never sought adjudication of her status until after the former INS placed her in removal proceedings. Just prior to the institution of removal proceedings in this case, Ortega claimed that she was a native and a citizen of Mexico. Only upon removal proceedings did she assert her United States citizenship. And Ortega alleged her status as a national of the United States as a defense to removal before the immigration judge. So it is beyond question that appellant's status arose by reason of or in connection with her removal proceedings, thereby triggering the bar under Section 1503A1. Ortega's claim is precluded even though removal proceedings terminated prior to her action in district court. Congress meant to preclude claims that arose in removal proceedings even where the removal proceedings have terminated. Compare Section 1503A1 with Section 1503A2. 1503A1 says that claims that arose by reason of or in connection with removal proceedings are barred. Section 1503A2 refers to live removal proceedings where issue of citizenship is an issue in any removal proceedings. Congress's use of the past tense in the term arose in 1503A1 in the first exception indicates that the provision was intended to apply to concluded removal proceedings. And indeed, the first exception would be superfluous if the section only applied to instances where removal proceedings were still pending.
Would it still apply to a situation where a removal proceeding, although concluded, was under review under 1252 in the Court of Appeals?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's not superfluous?
Well, I think what you have to do, Your Honor, is view Section 1503 in the context of the statutory scheme. And it can barely be fairly said that this statutory scheme, the INA, means to insulate removal proceedings from collateral attacks in the district courts or conflicting decisions between district courts and removal proceedings. And Congress clearly meant to provide priority to removal proceedings, to answer your question earlier. For instance, in 8 U.S.C. Section 1429, under that section, naturalization applications can't go forward if removal proceedings are pending. And to that same end, Congress sought to give removal proceedings priority.
Isn't that exactly what the government did here? It lost before the IJ, got a second bite at the apple.
Well, removal and...
You violated the statutory scheme yourself then, or the intent of it.
Well, no, Your Honor, because removal, deportation proceedings, and status proceedings are completely separate matters. Naturalization is distinct from 1503 or certificates of citizenship. Status is not the same thing as whether or not an alien is removable. And appellant seeks to argue that the immigration judge in this case conclusively adjudicated the matter of Ortega's citizenship. He did not. He merely accepted her defense of citizenship and terminated removal proceedings in her favor. That doesn't mean that the government is doing anything opposite of the immigration judge's ruling when it finds that she has not met her burden of showing her status as a United States citizen in this case. There are two different matters.
What is to prevent the government from retaliating after losing a case before the IJ? You lose in removal proceedings and you say, we'll fix this person, and you do. I mean, you make it difficult for her to assert citizenship in any other way.
Well, this court has
to render her as stateless as you can.
Well, this court has to presume, and the name of the case escapes me, but this court has to presume that the government's acting in good faith, that the government acts in good faith. But again, the issue of status is distinct from whether or not an alien is removable. And I think the point in this case is that Ortega can still obtain judicial review. She needs only to file another N-600. After exhausting her claim before the agency, she could then file an action for de novo review of any denial pursuant to Section 1503A. Because removal proceedings have terminated, now that her removal proceedings have run their course, her new citizenship claim would not arise in removal proceedings. And reading the statute this way properly balances Congress's intent with individual rights of an alien.
This is what the Fifth Circuit said, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
You think the Fifth Circuit's correct then?
Yes, I think that this Court should find their reasoning persuasive.
That requires that we put a judicial gloss on the statute, does it not?
No, Your Honor. It only requires this Court to read the statute, the plain language of the statute as Congress wrote it. Now, Congress did not write in an exception for aliens whose removal proceedings were terminated in their favor.
The Fifth Circuit acknowledged that.
Right.
The Fifth Circuit didn't rely on plain language when the Fifth Circuit said it had to put some kind of limitation on the language of the statute to prevent it from, in effect, being a ridiculous limitation on the individual.
I think that they were merely addressing the appellant's argument that he was, same as the appellant's argument in this case, that he was forever barred, like an albatross that forever hangs upon his neck from seeking a certificate of citizenship. And the Fifth Circuit said, no, he can just file a new N-600. Same here. Ortega can just file a new N-600 and get her judicial review in court upon a proper denial. And this balances Congress's intent to insulate removal proceedings, avoid collateral attacks, avoid inconsistent results between the district courts and removal proceedings, yet provide individuals with some rights of process to seek review, judicial review. The government's position is that the statute of limitations would not be any bar to any future action by Ortega should she file a new N-600. Each denial of a right or privilege under 1503 gives rise to an action. In Bensky, what happened in that case was there was an approval of a certificate of loss of nationality. That was the one and only occurrence that was capable of triggering 1503 a jurisdiction in that case, because the government wasn't going to approve a certificate of loss of nationality when it had already approved one affirming that the appellant in that case lost his nationality. But in this case, Ortega's free to file as many N-600s applications as she wants, and each denial would give rise to an action under the statute.
What is the import of the prior denial on a new proceeding?
It would not be afforded any deference. This will be a new N-600 proceeding. And granted, substantially the same issues would be redetermined, but that is the only route, although it poses some inconvenience to Ortega, that is the only route that squares with the statute.
So the agency would not consider at all its prior denial of the application in a new proceeding?
It would be adjudicated anew, presumably by a different adjudicator.
Why should we? I didn't mean to interrupt you if you had more to say to it.
No, Your Honor.
But then we have to presume that Congress, in effect, would require the courts to go through what really is a repetitious act for the fun of it, right? I mean, why can't the district court take care of this matter now rather than have a new application filed, a new administrative decision, and it be filed once again, and it be adjudicated once again by the court?
It does seem in instances such as this case that the benefit is somewhat ephemeral, but I believe that Congress is this is the only way to, as Congress intended, to insulate removal proceedings. If you look at the INA...
trying to make logic out of using the plain wording methodology, you're trying to make sense out of a statute that can't be made sense out of.
Well,
if you use that methodology. That's why the Fifth Circuit just put a gloss on the statute.
Well, we're not necessarily required to make sense of it if the plain language is unambiguous. we don't even need to get into what, obviously we want to understand and make sense of all this. But the point is that if you look at the INA.
Plain language leads to nonsense. Follow it. Come to attention, salute, follow it anyway, right?
Well, I think what you're addressing is the doctrine of absurdity, Your Honor, and I just don't think that it's necessarily an absurd result in this, where the statutory scheme just merely inconveniences an applicant by forcing her to jump through some extra hoops. That's not necessarily an absurdity, and a doctrine of avoiding absurd results is limited. It's a tool for choosing between competing plausible interpretations of a statutory text, but as I just indicated, the canon doesn't permit the courts to impose upon a statute an interpretation that does violence to the statute's language. And in this case, the statute is clear and unambiguous. Congress meant to bar 1503 actions that arose by reason of or in connection with removal proceedings. One other thing I wanted to note is that throughout her brief, never mind, Your Honor, I see I'm out of time.
No, you may conclude your thought.
Throughout her brief, Ortega presumes that her standalone claim to citizenship implicates due process. There's no due process right to judicial review of a standalone claim of citizenship. Ortega hasn't suffered a deprivation similar to deportation, which implicates liberty, property, or life, and therefore deserves the protection against erroneous deprivation under the Fifth Amendment guarantee of due process of law, nor has she pointed to any other deprivation of life, liberty, or property upon which to anchor her claim.
She is a citizen of no state?
But in order to be implicate due process, she has to suffer some kind of deprivation. And my point, Your Honor,
she's
is that...
She's a stateless person. That's not a deprivation. She has no avenue to litigate.
There's no benefit that she is necessarily being deprived of by virtue of that, as you put, statelessness. But, again, I'm way over time. I would just ask, respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the district court that this Ortega's action was barred under Section 1503.
I just have one further question. It's the government's position that Ms. Ortega can file a new N-600 and that proceeding would be adjudicated anew without regard to what has already occurred.
Correct, Your Honor.
Other than she could put in the evidence that was before the IJ and the IJ's determination.
The IJ's
adjudicating her citizenship defense, correct? Or in
she could put it in, but the immigration judge's decision on removal proceedings under Section 14 or 8 U.S.C. 1429 are not binding and have no effect on the matter of someone's status.
Okay, but the new application would be adjudicated in a plenary fashion. Is that the government's position?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that
that fixes the jurisdictional
the authority
problem.
For that is what?
Well, it's an idea that, of course, the Rios court accepted, and it's also was the government's position in that case, and it's the government's position in this case.
So there's nothing in the immigration code that prohibits successive applications for citizenship?
No, Your Honor. She can file as many as she wants, if she so chooses, and that's what she should do in this case if she wants judicial review upon a denial. She does that, she fixes the jurisdictional problems with this instant action. And she can proceed with an over review.
Okay. So if she applies and she's turned down again, then she can bring this claim before the district court under the statute because there are no removal proceedings implicated anymore.
Right. They didn't find their genesis within the context of removal proceedings. They have long since terminated. And so she wouldn't be barred by Section 1503A1.
Okay.
She could get her day in court.
Okay. And if she were to apply for some other sort of benefit of citizenship?
Like a passport, Your Honor?
Right.
And upon the denial of that, she could seek review under 1503A as well.
Okay. So there are other avenues to get into the district court by either filing a new citizenship application or seeking some other benefit of citizenship from whatever the appropriate federal agency is.
Correct, Your Honor. Ortega, despite her claims, is not barred from seeking judicial review.
Okay.
Under 1503, she merely needs to file another N-600 or apply for a passport and be denied. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Dempsey. Your time had expired, Mr. Marsh, but you may have an additional 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Picking up on your question, Your Honor, Ms. Ortega did initiate this action long after the removal proceedings were terminated. Exactly what Mr. Dempsey says she could do now, she's already done.
Well, not exactly.
And the record's the same.
She initiated the action in district court after the removal proceedings had been terminated, but she didn't initiate an application for citizenship or the benefits of citizenship. That was done while the removal proceedings were pending, and that, it seems to me, is what falls within at least the literal language of the statute.
I disagree, and that's because, as your colleague pointed out, 1503 doesn't talk about the initiation of the administrative proceedings. It talks about the initiation of the district court action. So there is nothing precluding her from filing an N-600 tomorrow or yesterday. What's precluded under the statute is her initiating a district court appeal of the denial of that claim. That's the problem. And the record that was presented to the Administrative Appeals Unit well after the termination, years after the termination of the removal proceedings, the exact same record that she would propose today. She did give the immigration judge tapes. She did give all the evidence that she wasn't allowed to in the 12 days that they denied her N-600 in the first instance, provide to the Immigration Service.
Well, is this in the nature of an appeal, an administrative appeal, or is it a freestanding district court action where the court can take evidence, is not bound by the administrative record, et cetera, et cetera?
You're absolutely right, and my description of appeal is not accurate. It's a de novo review by the district court of her issue, mm-hmm. namely, does she, and is she entitled to a citizenship of the United States?
Could you file, Mr. Marsh, for a form N-600 and at the same time seek simultaneously action in the district court under 1503?
You have to have your district court action can only be brought after exhaustion of administrative remedies. Therefore, there has to be some triggering N-600 filed in the first instance. If Your Honors believe that this statute did not anticipate this situation or is ambiguous on this sort of situation where there's no denial and removal proceedings, what I would encourage you to do is to read the exceptions narrowly. Read the statute broadly, but read the exceptions narrowly. And that's consistent with how courts deal with these issues when constitutional due process issues are raised. And there is no question, we've cited, Your Honors, plenty of cases, denaturalization cases, where the courts have said, no, this triggers constitutional concerns. There ought to be an Article III court to review these kind of things.
Well, right, but a ruling in favor of the government here doesn't really implicate due process considerations because there are so many other avenues for her to get into court.
1252 is not available because she can't be put in removal proceedings again.
Right.
Right. She can't file habeas. She's not in government custody.
I'm talking about the new N-600 or some other application for the benefits of citizenship, which would then be denied, which would trigger this proceeding.
Understood. And our position is that there is no logic behind why a new N-600 would provide a new genesis for this claim. If it's barred under the statute, it's barred under the statute when it was first raised.
But you would not make that argument if she were to proceed in that fashion.
If she were forced to proceed in that fashion, I might even make a different argument about the statute of limitations.
I got it. Right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Thank you, Mr. Dempsey. The case is taken under advisement.